Cody. An inner voice taunts as I reach my shiny, expensive car. Ugh. Even my own mind is trying to make me feel bad about myself. It was a gift, I remind my traitorous brain. A high school graduation gift from my parents, which makes the car 3 years old. That's like a senior citizen in vehicle years. And what was I supposed to do? Refuse the present? I'm my dad's baby girl, his little princess. He's going to spoil me whether I like it or not. But having a nice car doesn't make me surface level. Having an interest in fashion and being part of a sorority doesn't make me surface level. Forget him. I click the key fob to unlock the car door, but I don't get into the driver's seat. Something keeps my boots planted to the asphalt. I believe that something is called, "Oh, sweet baby Jesus, I don't want to go home and see the guy who thinks I'm fluff." It's hard to believe that 2 weeks ago I was excited about seeing Fitzy. Now I'm dreading it. My unicorn is no longer a unicorn. He's a judgmental donkey. I press the lock button. Screw it. Maybe I'll grab a coffee from the coffee hut first. I'm not ready to see him yet. Coward. I quickly unlock the car. I'm not a coward. I'm Summer Hayward De Laurentiis. And I don't give a flying hoot what Colin Fitzgerald thinks about me. I lock the car, because clearly I do care what he thinks. I unlock the car, because I shouldn't care. Lock, unlock, lock, unlock. Okay, this looks like fun, exclaims a highly amused voice. Let me guess, your ex's car? I jump in surprise. I was so focused on the stupid key fob that I didn't even notice the girl approach me. What? No, it's mine. A pair of dark eyebrows furrow at me. Really? What's with the maniacal clicking, then? I'm equally confused. Why would it be my ex's car? What did you think I was doing to it? Draining the key battery so he wouldn't be able to unlock it later? I figured you'd stole his keys and were looking for a way to screw him. Are you kidding? That sounds like the most exhausting payback scheme ever. I'd have to stand out here for hours to drain this thing. If I wanted revenge, I'd just slash a tire or two. Fast and effective. Tire slashing? That's insane, and I love it. She nods in approval, causing her thick chestnut brown hair to fall over one shoulder. Anyway, enjoy whatever the hell it is you're doing, crazy girl. Later. The brunette starts to walk off. Hey, I call after her. You need a ride somewhere? Awesome. I'm offering rides to complete strangers now. The level of dread Fitzy has instilled in me is off the charts. She turns with a laugh. Thanks, but I'm going to Hastings, she says, referring to the nearest town. It's a short drive from campus and also happens to be my destination. I'm going there too, I blurt out. It's a sign. I'm not supposed to go home yet. The universe wants me to give this chick a ride first. She slowly walks back to me, shrewd brown eyes studying me from head to toe. I'm fairly sure I couldn't appear any more harmless. My hair is thrown up in a messy bun, and I'm wearing a cream-colored pea coat, dark blue skinny jeans, and brown leather riding boots. I look like I stepped off the pages of a Gap catalog. I won't murder you, I say helpfully. If anything, I should be worried about my own safety. Those heels look lethal. Actually, she looks lethal. She's got black leggings on, a black coat, and black boots with those deadly 4-inch heels. A red knit hat covers her head, with her dark hair streaming out from under it. And she's wearing bright red lipstick even though it's only noon. She's such a badass. And I think I love her. I'm Summer, I add. I transferred here from Brown and I just moved into a townhouse in Hastings. She purses her lips for a moment before answering, I'm Brenna. I live in town too. She shrugs and marches to the passenger's side door. Unlock it for real this time, crazy girl. I'll take that ride. 6. Summer. So, not that I'm complaining, trust me, I'm happy not to pay for an Uber or campus taxi, but do you always pick up random chicks in parking lots? Brenna asks cheerfully. I snort, No, and FYI, this isn't a pickup. I mean, you're gorgeous, but I like men. Huh. I like men, too. And even if I did like women, you wouldn't be my type, Malibu Barbie. You've got the wrong coast. I'm from Greenwich, Connecticut. I shoot back. But I'm smiling because I heard the humor in her tone. And no, I don't usually invite stranger danger into my life. I decide to be honest. I'm doing everything in my power not to go home. Ooh, intriguing. Why's that? Brenna shifts in the passenger seat, angling her black-clad body so she's better able to study me. I can feel her eyes boring into the side of my head. I keep my gaze on the road.
It's two very narrow lanes, and there's a dusting of snow on the ground, so I'm driving carefully.
I already have two fender benders on my record, both of which happened while driving in winter weather, when I didn't give myself enough room to stop. I moved in a few days ago, I tell her. My roommates have been out of town. They went on a ski trip to Vermont or something. So I've had the place to myself. But they texted this morning to say they're on their way back. I suppress a nervous shiver. They might even be there now. So, what do we have against the roomies? Are they assholes? One of them is. It's a long story. Brenna laughs. We're strangers who just committed to a car ride together. What else are we going to talk about? The weather? Tell me why you don't like these chicks. Dicks, I correct. Huh? My roommates are guys? Three guys. Oh, hell yes! Tell me more. Are they hot? I can't help but laugh. Very hot, but it's a messed up situation. I made out with one of them on New Year's Eve. And? I don't see the problem. It was a mistake. I bite my lip. I had a crush on one of the other two, but I overheard him talking shit about me and I was upset, so... So you revenge-kissed his roomie. Gotcha. There's no judgment in her tone, but I still feel defensive. It wasn't a revenge kiss, it was... I make an aggravated noise. It was actually a very good kiss. But you wouldn't have done it if you weren't mad at the other one. Probably not, I admit, slowing down as we approach an intersection with a red light. What kind of shit was he saying? She asks curiously. My foot shakes on the brake pedal as I relive the hurt and embarrassment of walking out of the restroom and overhearing Fitzy's conversation with Garrett at the bar. It wasn't being called fluff that upset me, so much as the fact that he was standing there listing all the reasons why he would never, ever date someone like me. He told his friend that I'm surface level. My face heats up. He thinks I've got zero substance and that I'm a party girl, and he said he'd never go out with me. What the fuck? Brenna smacks her palm on her thigh. Screw him, right? Oh my God, and now you have to live with the creep? Genuine sympathy rings in her voice. That's the worst. I'm so sorry. Yeah, it sucks. Frustration jams in my throat like a wad of gum. I'm mad, obviously. But I'm also super disappointed in him. Jesus, you sound like my father. She deepens her voice and mimics her dad. I'm not mad at you, Brenna. I'm just disappointed. Ugh, I hate that. Sorry, I giggle. It's true, though. I am disappointed. I thought he was a nice guy, and I liked him. I was convinced he was going to make a move on me. He was sending out vibes, you know? And I totally would have done more than make out with him. I glance over sheepishly. That's huge for me. I don't ever sleep with someone before I've been on a date with them, and even then, it's usually several dates before I put out. Prude, she cracks. Hey, I might burn down sorority houses, but I'm an old-fashioned girl at heart. Brenna hoots in delight. Okay, we will be circling back to that sorority house comment. Oh, trust me, we fucking will. But let's stay on the topic at hand. So you don't typically give your flower to a boy until he proves that he's a prince. But you would have gladly offered this jerk your entire lady garden, except then he revealed his true colors and you hooked up with his friend instead. Pretty much. I flash back to the moment Hunter Davenport stopped me from leaving the bar. I'd been making my way through the crowd toward the exit. Fitzy's comment to Garrett had been so hurtful. I was actually going to bail on New Year's Eve. But then I bumped into Hunter, and he said something to make me laugh. I don't even remember what it was. The next thing I knew, the countdown reached the last second, and Hunter pulled me into his arms and kissed me.
It was hot. He was a fabulous kisser, and hard as a rock as he ground up against me. I can't say I regret it, because I really did enjoy it at the time. But at the time, I also hadn't anticipated I'd end up living with the guy. Dean arranged everything without consulting me first, though, in all honesty, there's no scenario in which I wouldn't have jumped at the chance to move into Dean's old house. Not only is it a million times better than the dorms, but finding anything else in Hastings would be insanely tough. Maybe a tiny basement apartment, but even those get snatched up fast. Available housing is hard to come by in a town this small. The only downside is that I now have to live with the guy I kissed. And the guy who, at one point, I desperately wanted to kiss. And Hollis, but he's harmless because I haven't kissed him, nor have I ever wanted to. Brenna looks over. Did y'all? Y'all? I tease. She grins. My mother was from Georgia. Y'all is the only piece of the South I inherited from her. Was? The mood sobers slightly. She passed away when I was 7. I'm sorry. That must have been rough. My life would literally be in shambles if I didn't have my mom. She's my rock. It was. Brenna quickly switches the topic back. Anyway, did y'all know you'd be living together before New Year's? No way! I wouldn't have done anything with either one of them if I'd known. That's setting myself up for a whole lot of awkward. It's already going to be an adjustment living with 3 boys after spending 2.5 years in a sorority house full of girls. Okay, but obviously the boys don't think it's awkward, otherwise they wouldn't have agreed to let you move in. They all agreed to it, right? Right. Although I'd actually only spoken to Mike Hollis and exchanged a few texts with Hunter, who, blessedly, didn't bring up our makeout session. I've been in contact with 2 of them. No contact with Fitz, though. From the corner of my eye, I see Brenna's head whip in my direction. Did you say Fitz? Uh-oh. Panic tugs at my stomach. Does she know him? I guess it's not inconceivable that she might. Fitz isn't exactly the most common of nicknames. Luckily, I'm presented with the perfect opportunity to change the subject, because we've just reached Hastings' idyllic Main Street. I can't get over how cute this town is, I chirp, avoiding Brenna's gaze by focusing on the shops and restaurants lining the street. Oh, cool! I didn't know there was a movie theater. It's a lie, of course I knew. It took me all of 5 minutes to explore Hastings and its attractions. It doesn't offer a great selection, only 3 screens. She points to a storefront just past the town square. I'm meeting my friends at Della's Diner. It's right up there. I haven't been to Della's yet, but I plan to. Apparently it's a 50s-themed place where the waitresses wear old-fashioned uniforms. I heard they serve a gazillion different kinds of pie. The guy who was trash-talking you, his name is Fitz? Damn it. I was hoping I'd succeeded in distracting her, but she's back on the scent. Yes, I admit. It's a nickname, though. Short for Fitzgerald? First name Colin? Shit. I narrow my eyes at her. You're not an ex of his or something, are you? No, but we're friends. Well, friendly. Fitzy's a hard guy to be friends with. Why's that? Mysterious? The strong, silent type, etc., etc. She pauses for a beat. He's also not someone I could ever see talking trash about a girl, or anyone for that matter. My jaw tightens. I'm not making it up, if that's what you're implying. Didn't think you were, she says lightly. I can spot a liar from a mile away, and you sound genuinely beat up about this. I don't think you would have made out with the other one if... Oh, man. Is Davenport the other one? Hunter Davenport, right? He's the one you hooked up with? I've never felt more uncomfortable in my life. I grit my teeth as I pull up in front of the diner, stopping at the curb without killing the engine. Here we are! Brenna completely ignores the fact that we've arrived. It's like she's talking to herself. Yeah, of course it was Hunter. I can't see you hooking up with Hollis. He's so annoying. He'd probably be whispering the douchiest things the whole time. I sigh. So you know Hunter and Hollis, too?
She rolls her eyes. I know all of them. My dad's Chad Jensen. I blank on the name. Who? The head coach of the men's hockey team? I'm Brenna Jensen. Coach Jensen is your father? Yup, he's... Her jaw opens in outrage. Wait a minute. Did you say they were skiing this weekend? Those assholes! They're not allowed to be doing that in the middle of the season. My dad will kill them if he finds out. Damn it. That's totally on me. I hadn't expected Brenna to know who I was talking about when I mentioned the ski trip. He's not going to find out, I say firmly, because you're not going to say anything. I won't, she assures me, but her tone is absent-minded. She's busy staring at me again, this time in complete bewilderment. I don't get it. How on earth did a sorority girl from Brown end up moving in with three hockey players, who, by the way, are eligible bachelors with a capital B? Every puck bunny in a 50-mile radius is in serious pursuit of a Briar hockey player, 'cause so many of them end up in the NHL. They're friends with my older brother. He played hockey here last year. Who's your brother? She demands. Dean Hayward de la Laurentiis. She finishes with a gasp. Oh my God. I totally see the resemblance now. You're Dean's sister. I nod easily. I hope to hell she's not one of Dean's former hookups. He was a major player before he fell for Allie. I don't even want to know how many broken hearts he left in his man-whore wake. Brenna blanches as if she read my mind. Oh, no. Don't worry. I never went out with him. I didn't even go to Briar before this year. You didn't? No. I did 2 years of community college in New Hampshire, she explains. Transferred here in September. I'm a junior, but technically a freshman since it's my first year. She suddenly jerks in her seat as if her purse just bit her. Hold on. Phone's vibrating. I wait impatiently as she checks her phone. I need more details from this chick. ASAP! What are the chances that of all the random strangers I could have offered a ride to, I picked the daughter of Fitzy's hockey coach? And this might be her first year at Briar, but clearly she knows a lot about her father's players, including my brother, who she hasn't even met. Brenna types out a quick text. Sorry, my friends are demanding to know where I am. I should get going. I glare at her. Are you for real? You can't just drop the coach's daughter bomb on me and then leave. I want every last bit of information you have on these guys. She grins. Well, duh. Clearly we need to hang out again. I'd invite you to have lunch with us right now, but I'm not an enabler. What's that supposed to mean? It means you need to go home and face your roommates. Get the big awkward confrontation out of the way. She plucks my phone out of its dashboard stand. I'm texting myself from your phone so you have my number. Come to the game with me tomorrow night. Game? Briar's playing Harvard. My dad expects me to be at all the home games and any away games that are within an hour's drive of campus. Seriously? What if you have other plans? Then he cuts off my allowance. Are you fucking with you? Yes, she shrugs. If I'm busy, I don't go. If I'm not busy, I go. He doesn't ask much of me, and I love hockey and cute boys, so it's not exactly a hardship on my part. Good point. Her phone buzzes again, this time from the text she's just sent from mine. There, we're in each other's phones. We'll start planning the wedding next week. I snicker. Thanks for the lift. She hops out of the car and starts to close the door, but then abruptly pokes her head back in. Hey, whose jersey should I wear tomorrow night, Fitzy's or Davenport's? She blinks innocently. With a scowl, I flip up my middle finger. Not funny. That was hilarious and you know it. See you tomorrow, crazy girl. I watch enviously as she dashes into the diner. I'd love to be having lunch and eating pie right now. But Brenna's right. I can't keep putting it off. It's time to go home.
7. Fitz. There's a shiny Audi in the driveway when we pull up. My shoulders tighten and I hope Hunter doesn't notice the reaction. I don't glance at the driver's seat to gauge his reaction because I'm sure he's thrilled to see Summer's car. At least I assume it's Summer's. I stowed my beat-up Honda in the one-car garage before we left for Vermont, so there's nowhere else she could have parked. Besides, it's a fucking Audi. Hunter parks the Land Rover behind the silver car and addresses us in a stern voice. This stays between us. Obvs. Hollis yawns loudly and unbuckles his seatbelt. He slept like a rock in the backseat the entire drive home. I'm not joking. If this gets back to coach, it won't, Hollis assures him. This trip didn't happen, right, Fitz? I nod grimly. Didn't happen. Good. But let's go over our story in case he asks to practice tomorrow. Hunter kills the engine. We were in New Hampshire with Mike's folks. We chilled by the fire, sat in the hot tub, played Monopoly. I won, Hollis pipes up. I roll my eyes. Of course he has to be the winner of this fictional Monopoly game. Nah, I won, I say smugly. I bought Boardwalk and put 8 hotels on it. Screw that. I owned Boardwalk. Nobody owned Boardwalk, Hunter grumbles. We didn't play Monopoly. He's right. We were skiing, aka the stupidest thing we could ever do, seeing as how we're mid-season. But Hollis, Hunter, and I are not exactly the best influences on each other. We all grew up on the East Coast and love winter sports. So when Hollis suggested a secret ski trip over break, it sounded like too much fun to miss out on. Coach will be livid if he finds out, though. As hockey players, we can't do anything that might jeopardize our bodies or our season. A drunken ski weekend in Vermont? Cardinal sin. But sometimes you've got to prioritize fun, right? And no, I didn't agree to the trip just to delay seeing summer, because that's pitiful and stupid, and I'm neither pitiful nor stupid. So what if she hooked up with Hunter? She's not my type anyway. And now I get to pay less rent. Win-win. Okay, so we've got the story straight. New Hampshire, fire, hot tub, Monopoly, hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate?
Hollis screams.
What the hell? You're throwing a whole new plot twist into this. I don't know if I'll be able to remember.
I start laughing. Hunter shakes his head at us.
You guys have been playing for Jensen a whole year longer than me. You of all people should know what'll happen if he finds out we were partying this weekend. The skiing's bad enough. The booze and weed might be worse in his book.
Hollis and I sober up. He's got a point. The last time a player was caught partying, he was kicked off the team. That player happened to be Dean, who took some Molly at a party and then failed a piss test the next day. Not that we did anything like MDMA this weekend. Just a few beers, one joint, and a bunch of tricks on the slopes that we probably... Fine, that we absolutely shouldn't have tried. Let's go in. Can't keep our new roomie waiting.
Hollis is downright gleeful, his grin eating up his entire face.
Hunter gives him a dark look as he hops out of the Rover.
Hands off.
No way, you can't call dibs.
First of all, she's not a piece of meat. She's our roommate.
Hunter flicks up one eyebrow.
But if we are calling dibs, I'm pretty sure mine was implied when I had my tongue in her mouth.
My teeth clench of their own volition.
True.
Hollis sighs in defeat.
I'll back off.
The muscles in my jaw relax as I snicker. He says that as if he ever stood a chance. Hollis is a good-looking guy, but he's a total bro, not to mention obnoxious. A girl like Summer would never go for him.
Thank you, Hunter mocks. That's so generous of you, Mike. Truly, I'm touched.
I'm a good friend,
Hollis agrees. As we trudge up the front stoop, there's no mistaking the glint of anticipation in Hunter's eyes, which is to be expected. I saw his face when Dean called and said Summer needed a place to live. It was obvious he couldn't wait for a repeat performance of New Year's Eve. Since I've got a practical head on my shoulders, I swallowed my feelings on the matter and warned Hunter that whatever happens with him and Summer, it can't affect our living arrangements because her name is on the lease now. He assured us it wouldn't. As if he's already sure something will happen between them. Whatever. I don't care if it does. Let them hook up. I've got better things to focus on. I sling my duffel over my shoulder and wait for Hollis to unlock the front door. Inside, I drop the bag with a thud and kick off my boots. The others do the same.
Honey, we're home!
Hollis shouts. Laughter echoes from upstairs. My pulse speeds up when her footsteps approach the landing. She appears at the railing in fleece pants and a briar sweatshirt, her hair up in a messy twist. Hollis's eyes glaze over. There's nothing indecent about Summer's outfit, but this girl could make a burlap sack look sexy.
Hey, welcome home,
she says cheerfully.
Hey, I call up to her. My voice sounds strained.
Hunter shrugs out of his coat and tosses it on the hook.
Blondie, he drawls. Glad you're here.
Hollis nods.
For real?
Aw, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Hold on. You need a proper hello.
Grinning, Hunter bounds up the stairs. Her cheeks go a little pink as he draws her into his arms for a hug. I wrench my gaze away and pretend to be really focused with the task of hanging up my jacket. I don't know if he kisses her or not, but Summer is still blushing when I force myself to turn back.
Gonna get changed, Hunter says.
He ducks into his room and Hollis wanders off to the kitchen, which means Summer and I are alone when I reach the second floor landing. She watches me warily.
Did you guys have a good time?
I nod.
Cool.
She edges toward her open bedroom door. I peer past her slender shoulder and spot a perfectly made bed with a white duvet and about 100 throw pillows. There's a neon pink beanbag chair on the floor, along with a shaggy white rug. An open laptop sits on a small corner desk that wasn't there when Dean inhabited the room. She's made herself at home.
This is her home, a voice reminds me.
Thanks for letting me...
She corrects herself.
For agreeing to have me as a roommate.
I shrug.
No prob. We needed a fourth.
She's still inching away as if she doesn't want to be near me. I wonder if she's remembering how she practically threw herself at me on New Year's Eve and then ended up playing tonsil hockey with my teammate. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
Anyway,
she trails off. Yeah, I start traveling backward too. I'm gonna grab a shower. We got one last run in a round of Monopoly, I amend, before we left, and I'm all sweaty. Summer raises her eyebrows.
I didn't realize Monopoly was so strenuous.
Hunter snickers from his doorway. I turn to glare at him because he's the one who came up with the Monopoly alibi in the first place, but he's not there. He's moved past the doorway as he shrugs into a shirt. Board games are intense, I answer lamely. At least the way we play them.
Interesting. I can't wait for roomy game night then.
Her shoulder bumps the door as her backward journey ends.
Enjoy your shower, Fitz.
She disappears into her bedroom and I lumber into mine. When my phone buzzes, I almost fall over with relief. I need the distraction before I start thinking too hard about how fucking awkward that whole encounter was. The text on the screen makes me grin.
Still stuck at the third gate. I fucking hate you, bro.
Rather than text back, I call my buddy. Morris is a fellow gamer, a good friend, and currently demoing the role-playing game I spent the past 2 years designing.
Yo,
Morris answers immediately.
How do I get into the City of Steel, damn it?
I snicker.
Like I'm going to tell you. But I've been stuck here since last night.
I literally sent you the link last night. The fact that you've already made it to the city is wicked impressive. I shake my head. I haven't checked the message boards today, but last I saw, none of the other betas were even close to passing the village level.
Well, yeah, that's because I'm superior to them in every way. I'm the only one whose opinion matters.
And your opinion so far?
This game is boss.
Excitement gathers inside me. I love hearing that. Especially from a dedicated gamer like Morris, whose Twitch stream earns him a shit ton of money. Yep, people actually subscribe to watch him play video games online. He's that good, not to mention incredibly entertaining as he live streams his virtual adventures. Not to toot my own horn, but I'm a bit of a legend too. Not from live streaming, but reviewing. Up until this year, I reviewed games for the college blog, as well as other hugely popular gaming sites on the web, but I stopped reviewing because it was a time suck, and I needed to concentrate on my own game. Legion 48 isn't the most complex of RPGs. It's not multiplayer, and it follows a very scripted storyline rather than an open-world concept. With my schedule, it's hard enough to find time to play video games, let alone design them. But I'm in the process of applying for jobs at several game development companies, and I needed to give them a taste of what I'm capable of in terms of design techniques. Legion 48 might not be Skyrim or GTA, but all I need to do is show these studios I'm not a total hack. My greatest strength, I think, is that I did all the artwork myself along with the computer coding required to make the game functional. All of the art started out as rough sketches, was then drawn digitally, then turned into 3D assets. I can't even calculate how much time I spent on it, and that was nowhere close to how long it took to code the damn thing. Run into any bugs yet? I ask Morris.
Nothing major. When you speak to the dragon in the cave, the dialogue freezes up and then jumps to the next bit.
All right, easy fix. A relief, because it took hours upon hours to refine and hammer out all the pesky bugs in the alpha stage. For nearly a year, the game was barely playable. The first round of beta testing shed light on more bugs I'd missed. Somehow, despite my grueling schedule, I debugged the game enough to make it fully functional and ready for this second and final round of beta testing. This time, dozens of gamers are playing, including many of my college friends.
Hasn't crashed yet, he adds helpfully.
Yet? Don't jinx it, man. I've sent this thing to half a dozen studios. If it crashes on them...
Hasn't crashed, period.
Morris corrects.
Won't crash, ever. Now tell me how to open the third gate.
Nope.
But I'm dying to see the City of Steel. Is there an oracle I'm supposed to talk to? Why can't I find this key?
Guess you're not as good as you think you are.
Oh, fuck off.
Fine, whatever. I'm gonna beat this thing and then call you to gloat.
You do that. I grin to myself.
I'll find you online later. Jumping in the shower now.
Cool. Ciao.
I strip out of my clothes and head for the bathroom, a spring to my step. Morris's enthusiasm for Legion 48 managed to ease the tension plaguing my body. But my muscles tense up again at the sound of Summer's laughter in the hall. I gaze at my reflection in the mirror, noting the frustration in my eyes, the rigid set of my jaw. The harsh expression seems even harsher when paired with my tattoos, the two full sleeves covering my arms, and the chest piece that's done only in black. The piece is a bit faded now, though that almost gives it a cooler vibe. Not that I got tatted up because it's cool. I'm an artist. I designed all the tats myself, and whatever I can use as a canvas, I'll use, including my own skin. But when my face is surly and my beard is growing out and I'm brooding in front of the mirror, all the ink just makes me look like a thug. If I'm being honest, thug is kind of what I was going for during my brief high school rebellion. I got my first tat, the dragon on my left arm, when I was hanging with the dudes whose go-to solution for solving problems involved their fists, or brass knuckles. Don't get me wrong, they didn't pressure me to get inked. They just knew of a parlor that tattooed minors without their parents' permission. Because truthfully, the first time was essentially a fuck you to my folks. My sophomore art class had just put on an end-of-year exhibition, where mom and dad spent the whole time sniping at each other instead of supporting their kid. They walked right past my paintings, too busy arguing to notice my work. So 15-year-old Colin, badass that he was, decided, fine, you guys are too busy fighting to appreciate my art, so I'll put it right where you can see it. These days, I do view the tats as an extension of my art, but I can't deny it didn't start out that way. My shoulders tighten when I hear the low murmur of Hunter's voice, followed by another laugh from Summer. Guess he's picking up right where he left off.
8. Summer. That wasn't too bad. I managed to exchange several cordial sentences with Fitz without smacking him in his dumb face. Gold star for me. Except then take away my gold star and replace it with 3 rotten bananas because of the way my vagina responded to that dumb face. It tingled. Stupid vagina. I hate that I still find him attractive after all the hurtful comments he made about me. A knock on the door spares me from what probably would have been a solid hour of overthinking. Hunter saunters into the room and throws his lean, muscular body onto my bed. I need a nap. My mouth quirks in a wry smile. Sure, go ahead and make yourself at home. Aw, thanks, Blondie. He winks and proceeds to get even more comfortable by sprawling on his back and propping his arms behind his head. 2 tickets to the gun show, please. His arms are incredible. He's changed into a wife beater that shows off defined biceps and broad shoulders, and his sweatpants ride low enough on his hips that I can see the smooth tan stretch of Man V. It's just as tantalizing as the gun show. Hunter is hot, and he knows it. His lips curve when he notices me checking him out. Ugh, those lips. I still remember how they'd felt pressed against mine. He was a good kisser, not too aggressive, not too eager. A perfect amount of tongue. I wonder how Fitzy kisses. Like a jerk, Summer, my inner Selena Gomez says firmly. He kisses like a jerk. Right. Because he's a jerk. Why are you in my room, Hunter? I ask, leaning a hip against my desk. Figured we should tackle the big talk right out of the gate. I sigh ruefully. Good idea.
Aight. Let's do it.
I graciously gesture toward him. Men first. He snorts.
Coward.
Laughing, I hop up and sit on the desk. Honestly? I don't even know what to say. We made out. It wasn't a big deal. His dark eyes zero in on my bare legs, which are dangling over the edge of the desk. It's obvious he likes what he sees because his gaze turns molten. He reminds me a bit of Dean's friend, Logan, and not just because they look similar with their dark hair and hard bodies. Logan radiates sexual energy. I don't know how to describe it, but there's just something so raw and dirty about him. Hunter gives off that same vibe, and I can't deny it affects me. But just because we find each other attractive doesn't mean we have to do anything about it.
I know we texted a few times after that night, but I felt like there was more to talk about. You never really told me what it...
He stops abruptly. I wrinkle my forehead. I never told you what. He sits up and drags a hand over his scalp. He's buzzed his hair since I last saw him, but it's still long enough to rake his fingers through.
I was about to ask you what it meant.
He stares at me in horror.
I've become my worst nightmare.
I burst out laughing. Oh, honey, it's okay. Lots of men try to find meaning in New Year's kisses. I give him a pointed look. He groans.
Don't rub it in, Blondie.
Sorry, I had to. You were so cocky that night, acting like any girl you kissed at midnight would demand to have your babies. I stick out my tongue. Well, who's the one who wants to have my babies? You. His shoulders shake with laughter. I slide off the desk. Tables have turned, I say in a sing-song voice. Hunter gets to his feet. He's taller than I remember, standing at well over 6 feet. Same with Fitz, but I suppose most hockey players have the height advantage. There's one guy on the Breyer team who's 5'9", though. I think his name is Wilkins. One time I heard Dean raving about how tough he is considering his size.
Don't worry, Hunter says. I'm not thinking about babies just yet.
No? What are you thinking about then? He doesn't respond, those dark eyes lower to my chest before flicking back to my face. I'm not wearing a bra. He definitely noticed. And I'm definitely noticing that his sweatpants seem a bit tighter in the crotch area than they were 2 minutes ago. When he notices me noticing, he coughs and angles his body slightly. A sigh flutters out of my throat. You're not going to make this weird, are you? Two ridiculously adorable dimples cut into his chiseled cheeks.
Define weird.
I don't know, be awkward, tiptoe around me. He takes another step toward me.
Does it look like I'm tiptoeing?
He drawls. My heart beats faster. Damn, he's smooth. Okay, then, are you going to get all lovesick, write poetry about me, and cook me breakfast?
Poetry isn't my style, and I can't cook for shit.
He edges closer until our faces are inches apart.
I'm happy to make you coffee in the morning, though.
I don't drink coffee, I say smugly. His answering chuckle brings out his dimples again.
I can already tell you're going to make this hard for me, eh?
This? I echo warily. And what exactly is this? He slants his head, contemplating for a beat.
I don't know yet, he admits. His breath tickles my ear as he leans in to murmur into it. But I'm kind of excited to find out.
Hunter's fingertips lightly graze my bare arm. Then, before I can blink, he's sliding out the door. My new neighborhood is a vow of silence convent compared to the Kappa House at Brown.
At 1 in the morning, the only sound beyond my bedroom window is the occasional cricket. No car engines, no music, no shrieky, drunken sorority girls or loud-mouthed frat boys egging each other on during a rowdy game of beer pong. I have to admit, I find it unsettling. Silence is not my friend. Silence forces you to examine your own mind, to face the thoughts you pushed aside during the day, or the worries you hoped would go away, the secrets you tried to keep. I'm not a fan of my own thoughts. They tend to be a jumble of insecurity mixed with self-doubt, a splash of inner critic, and a sprinkling of misplaced overconfidence. It's a fucked up place, my mind. I roll over and groan into my pillow. The muffled noise is like a blast of gunfire in the eerily quiet room. I can't sleep. I've been tossing and turning since 11:30, and it's really starting to tick me off. I slept just fine when the guys were in Vermont. I don't get why their presence ought to change that. Trying to force sleep is pointless, so I kick the comforter off and stumble out of bed. Screw it. I'm getting something to eat. Maybe it'll send me into a food coma afterward. Since I sleep in nothing but panties, I grab the first item of clothing I find. It happens to be a thin white t-shirt that shows the outline of my nipples and barely covers my thighs. I slip it on anyway, because I doubt my roomies will be awake to see it. Hunter said they have a 6 a.m. practice. But I'm wrong. One roomie is very much awake. Fitzy and I both release startled noises when our gazes collide in the kitchen. Shit, I curse. You scared me. Sorry, and ditto. He's sitting at the table, long legs resting on the chair beside him, a sketch pad in his lap. Oh, and he's shirtless. As in, not wearing a shirt? I can't even. I wrestle my gaze off his bare chest, but it's too late. Every detail has already been branded in my brain. The full sleeve tats covering his arms, the black swirl of ink that stretches along his collarbone and stops just above his heavy pecs. His abs are so chiseled, it looks like someone drew them on with a contouring brush. Like Hunter, he's all muscle and no fat. But while Hunter's chest triggered appreciation and some tingles, Fitz unleashes a flurry of shivers and a tight clench of need.
I want to put my mouth on him.
I want to trace every line and curve of his tats with my tongue. I want to grab his sketch pad and whip it aside so I could be the one in his lap, preferably with my lips glued to his and my hand wrapped around his dick. God help me. I don't get it. He's not my usual type at all. I've been surrounded by prep school boys my whole life, and that's what I'm typically drawn to. Polo shirts, clean-shaven faces, and million-dollar smiles. Not tattoos and scruff.
Can't sleep?
He says lightly. No, I admit. I open the fridge and scan the contents for something appetizing. How about you?
I should have turned in about an hour ago, but I wanted to finish this sketch before bed 'cause I won't have time to do it tomorrow.
I settle on some yogurt and granola, glancing over at Fitz as I prepare a bowl. What are you drawing?
Just something for a video game I'm working on.
He snaps the sketchbook closed, even though I wasn't trying to sneak a peek at it. Right. Dean mentioned you're a gamer. I thought you just reviewed games, though. You designed them, too?
Only one so far. Working on a second one now, he says vaguely.
He obviously doesn't want to discuss it, so I shrug and say, cool. Sounds interesting. I perch against the counter and swallow a spoonful of yogurt. Silence falls over the kitchen. I watch him as I eat, and he watches me eat. It's both painfully uncomfortable and strangely comfortable. Figure that one out. So many questions bite at my tongue, most of them relating to New Year's Eve. Were you really not into me that night? Did I just imagine the interested vibes? Do you truly believe all those shitty things you said about me? I don't voice a single one. I refuse to reveal even a hint of vulnerability to this guy. He's not allowed to know how much his judgmental words hurt me. Instead, I put him in the hot seat for something else. You weren't supposed to be skiing. He blows out a quick breath.
No, we weren't.
So why did you?
Because we're idiots.
I smile, then get mad at myself for smiling at something he said.
Coach would freak if he found out. The other guys, too, if I'm being honest. It was a real dick move on our parts, he says roughly. So let's keep the ski trip between us, okay?
I give him a sheepish look. Too late.
What do you mean? His tone has sharpened.
I accidentally became best friends with your coach's daughter earlier today, and I accidentally told her you guys went skiing.
He gapes at me. Fucking hell, Summer!
I'm quick to defend myself. Hey, Hollis didn't say it was a secret when we spoke on the phone.
Fitz shakes his head a few times. How do you accidentally become friends with someone? He sputters. And why would our ski trip even be a topic of discussion? Did Brenna say if she was going to tell Coach?
She promised she wouldn't.
He curses under his breath. That's no guarantee. Brenna's dangerous when she loses her temper. Never know what'll come out of her mouth.
She won't tell, I assure him. Like I said, we're best friends now.
His lips twitch as if he's trying not to laugh.
I'm going to your Harvard game with her tomorrow, I add.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. I finish my yogurt and walk to the sink to wash the bowl. She's cool. We got along really well.
I hear him sigh. Loudly. I glance over my shoulder.
What was that for?
It's in anticipation of all the trouble I envision you and Brenna getting into. I predict you two are gonna be terrible influences on each other.
I can't help but laugh.
That's a possibility.
He sighs again.
An eventuality. I can already see it.
Grinning, I turn off the faucet and set the clean bowl in the drying rack. My heart somersaults when Fitzy's footsteps come up behind me.
Excuse me, just grabbing a glass,
he murmurs. One long arm stretches out toward the cupboard, inches from my cheek. His scent tickles my nostrils, woodsy with a hint of citrus. He smells so good. I wipe my hands on a dish towel and turn to face him. His breath hitches slightly, dark eyes flicking toward my chest before hastily dropping to the glass in his hand.
Oh, right. My t-shirt is see-through, and my nipples are hard little buds thanks to the cold water my hands were submerged in a minute ago. Well, that's why they were hard. Now they're poking through my shirt for another reason. A reason named Colin Fitzgerald, whose bare chest is so close I can touch it. Or lick it. I think I might be in trouble. I'm still attracted to him. Too attracted to him. I'm not allowed to lust over someone who harbors such negative thoughts about me. I breathe through my mouth to avoid his masculine scent and dart away from the counter. My gaze seeks out a distraction, something to focus on that isn't Fitzy's big, muscly, amazing chest. It lands on the fat paperback novels sitting next to the drawing pencils he left on the table. Oh! My voice sounds overly loud. I quickly lower it before I wake Hunter and Hollis. I love this series. I pick up the book and flip it over to skim the blurb. Are you just starting to read it or doing a reread? When Fitz doesn't answer, I look over and glimpse the skepticism flickering through his expression. When he speaks, his voice is laced with the same doubt. You've read the Shifting Winds books? The first three, I haven't gotten around to number four yet. I hold up the paperback, which is well over 1,000 pages. I heard it's even longer than these ones. Blood of the Dragon? Yeah, it's double the length. He says absently, still eyeing me uncertainly. I can't believe you read this series. A frown forms on my lips. Why's that? It's just really dense, and... He trails off awkwardly. It takes a second for the implication to sink in. It's not that he can't believe I've read these books. It's that he doesn't believe I've read these books. Indignation rises in my chest and sticks to my throat, forming a hot lump. Well, why would he, right? In his eyes, I'm surface level. The dumb sorority girl couldn't possibly comprehend such lengthy, dense material. Hell, he probably thinks I'm illiterate, too. A growl rips out of my throat. I know how to fucking read. He startles. What? I didn't say, and just because I don't have dragons and fairies and elves tattooed all over my body doesn't mean I'm not allowed to read fantasy books. Allowed. I didn't say, however dense they may be. I finish with a scowl. But it's good to know your thoughts on the matter.
With a tight smile, I drop the book on the table. Thud. Good night, Fitz. Try not to stay up too late. Summer. I'm out of the kitchen before he can say another word.
9. Fitz. Pre-game skates aren't usually grueling, but this morning Coach wants to run a few shooting drills he anticipates will help us tonight. Harvard has been unstoppable this year. They're well on their way to a perfect season. And although I'd never say it out loud, I think they might be the better team in this matchup. Coach must secretly think so too because he pushes us harder than usual. I'm a sweaty mess by the time I lumber off the ice. My hair is plastered to my forehead, and I swear there's cartoon steam rolling out of my helmet. Coach smacks me on the shoulder.
Good hustle, Colin.
Thanks, Coach.
Davenport,
he says to Hunter.
Show me that same ruthlessness tonight, son. Shoot through Johansson, not around him. Feel me?
Got it, Coach. We have 30 minutes to shower and change before a mandatory meeting in the screening room to review game tape. This will be our first of two games against Harvard this season, and we want to send a message. It's an away game to boot, so it'll be extra tough, but extra sweeter if we can get a W in their arena. In the locker room, I strip off my sweaty practice gear and duck into the shower area. The stalls are divided by partitions and have saloon-style doors that mean we can't see each other's junk, but chests are fair game. Stepping into the stall next to Hollis, I crank the cold water and dunk my head. I swear I'm still sweating even under the cool spray.
Are we really not going to acknowledge the fact that Mike shaved his chest?
Dave Kelvin, a junior defenseman, demands. Laughter bounces off the acoustic tiles. I glance at Hollis and lift a questioning brow. I've showered, worked out, and gone swimming with the guy enough times to know that he usually has hair on his chest. Now it's smoother than a baby's bottom. Nate Rhodes, our team captain this year, grins.
Home job or salon?
Hollis rolls his eyes at the tall senior.
Home. Why would I pay someone to do something I can do myself? That's stupid.
He twists around so he can wave at Kelvin.
And you, get off your ivory horse, dude.
Ivory tower, I say helpfully.
Whatever. We all know you wax your chest and your back, Kelvin. Hypocritical fucktard.
I snort and rub soap over my chest. My body temperature is finally dropping.
I don't wax my back,
Kelvin protests.
Yes, you do. Nicky Orson ratted you out, you back hair motherfucker.
Nicky is a right winger on the Briar women's team. She's a great player and an awesome girl, but she also happens to be a serious blabbermouth. You can't tell her anything you don't want anyone else knowing. As Nate and a couple other seniors hoot loudly, Kelvin's face turns beet red.
I'm gonna kill her.
Oh, relax, princess, Hunter drawls. Every dude you see on Instagram waxes some part of his body.
Yeah, what's the big deal? Hollis says. There's no shame in manscaping.
This is a safe place. Nate agrees solemnly.
Exactly, safe place. We all manscape here, or at least we all fucking should if we consider ourselves fucking gentlemen.
Hollis chides. Swallowing a laugh, I place the soap back in its tray and start rinsing off.
Seriously, bro, what's with the makeover?
Matt Anderson pipes up. Like Kelvin, he's a junior D-man. The two of them were beyond shitty last year, but our new defensive coach, Frank O'Shea, has been working the D-man hard all season, and he's really whipped them into shape.
Got a date after the game tonight,
Hollis reveals.
What, the chick has something against body hair?
Hates it. She swallowed a pube once, and it triggered her gag reflex, so she threw up all over her boyfriend's dick, and then he started ralphing too, because vomit makes him vomit, and they broke up right after that. For one long moment, the only sound in the huge room is the rushing water. Then it transforms into the weeping laughter of a bunch of buck-ass naked dudes.
Oh my fucking god, that is the best thing I've ever heard in my life,
Hunter moans.
She told you all this?
Our team captain is doubled over, and I can't tell if it's tears or water streaming down his face.
Said she wouldn't even consider boning down if a guy had body hair. That includes chest, arms, legs, so...
Hollis shrugs.
You did your arms and legs too?
Nate squawks. Hunter laughs harder.
Women are nuts,
Kelvin grumbles. He has a point.
Women are messed up. I mean, Summer told me off last night for no good reason other than me being surprised that she'd read Shifting Winds. Apparently she took that to mean that I thought she couldn't read? Seriously? Although, fine, if I look at it from her perspective, I can see why she overreacted. Maybe it did come off a bit like I was implying she wasn't smart enough for the series or that she was lying about reading it. That wasn't my intention, though. Those books are legitimately tough to read. Hell, I barely got through them myself, and I've been reading fantasy religiously for years. If she'd given me a chance to respond, I could have told her that, and I would have apologized for insinuating I didn't believe her. But just as I've always suspected, Summer is all drama. 10 measly words could have cleared it up. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that, forgive me. If she'd let me speak, instead she'd stomped off like a 5-year-old. I grab a towel and hastily wrap it around my waist. Drama, I reiterate to myself. I'm not interested in drama. Never have been, never will be. So why can't I get her hurt expression out of my mind? Breyer's top-notch hockey facility is the land of luxury. We've got state-of-the-art equipment, well-ventilated locker rooms, an awesome shower setup, a lounge, kitchen, physio rooms, whirlpool. Name it, and we've got it. The viewing room is especially sweet. It resembles a small movie theater, only with 3 semicircular rows of tables and huge padded chairs. At the bottom of the gallery, the coaches have an AV setup similar to that of sports announcers, with an input for laptops and a video screen they can ride on. When they highlight plays or circle players, their scribbles show up on the big screen too. I plop down in the chair next to our goalie, Patrick Corson. Hey.
Hey.
He's staring at the screen, which is frozen on a shot of the Harvard Arena. It looks like last week's game, Harvard versus Boston College. BC got creamed that day. Harvard is definitely the team to beat this year. In the past, they were an easy divisional opponent for us because Breyer's always had the superior program. But this season, they're on fire, with more talent on the roster than ever before. After last year's seniors graduated, the lower-classmen who didn't get a chance to shine were given more ice time, and every single one of them has stepped up. Harvard's no longer relying solely on the skill of their team captain, like they did last year. Jake Connolly is damn good, but he can't carry an entire team.
Connolly's line is wicked fast, Corson says glumly.
Our line is faster, I assure him, referring to me, Hunter, and Nate.
Fine, but their second and third lines are just as fast. Can you say the same about ours?
He lowers his voice.
Plus, they've got a better D. Those 2 sophomores can't remember their names, but they're so good at keeping the puck out of their zone. Takes so much heat off Johansson.
Johansson is Harvard's goalie, and he's phenomenal. Truthfully, Corson's right to worry.
Kelvin and Brodowski aren't that strong, he mutters.
No, I agree. But Maddie is. I nod toward Anderson, who's texting on his phone. Like the Harvard boys, Matt stepped up after Dean and Logan graduated. He's now the leading scorer among the defensemen and one of our best penalty killers. He's also the only black player on the team, which he's damn proud of. He's entering the draft this year and eager to make his mark in a pro league that's predominantly white.
True, Maddie's an asset. Corson relents, but he still sounds unhappy.
I get why he's worried. He's signed by LA and playing for them next season, so it's always a concern if your draft team sees you shit the bed. A lot of the time, that guarantees you a spot on the farm team, though sometimes that's the better option, truth be told. That's what Logan is doing right now, playing for the Providence Bruins and developing his skills. Not everyone is like Garrett Graham, a born superstar, and not every college player is instantly ready for the pros. Coach marches into the room and claps his hands.
Let's get started.
He doesn't shout, just uses his speaking voice, but everyone snaps to attention as if he'd screamed like a drill sergeant. Jensen is the kind of man who just commands respect. He's also a man of few words, but the words he does use wield a lot of power.
Take a good look at this kid, he orders.
He presses play and the picture on the screen jumps to life. A skater, jersey number 33, whizzes across the blue line. Coach pauses the frame, draws on his tablet, and a bright red circle appears on the player like a target.
Junior, left wing, he says briskly. Brooks Weston.
The goon,
a sophomore pipes up.
So?
Hollis cracks. We've got our own goons. We can take him.
He's more than an enforcer, Coach Jensen tells us. He's a goddamn instigator and a scourge to this earth.
We snicker.
This little fucker has the superhuman ability to commit infraction after infraction without being called. And he's very, very skilled at drawing penalties from other guys. His specialty is provoking fights. End result is him usually coming out smelling like roses, while the other guy draws a major or, worst case, an ejection. A mumble of general disapproval ripples through the room, even though I'm sure we've all been guilty at one point or another of trying to provoke opponents into committing an infraction. Some players do it habitually, though, using it as a strategy. Coach Jensen doesn't believe in this strategy. If it were up to him, the NCAA would take a much stronger stance on penalty gameplay.
No matter what trash comes out of this kid's mouth, you don't let it get to you. You hear me?
He fixes us all with a deadly look.
I'm not scared of some rich kid with a potty mouth, drawls Kelvin.
How do you know he's rich? Hunter asks in amusement.
His first name is also a last name. That usually means his parents called him that to honor two filthy rich grandparents.
My first name is also a last name, Hunter points out.
Yeah, and you're filthy rich,
Hollis chimes in, snorting with laughter.
Hell, you probably know this Wesley Brook guy.
Brooks Weston, someone corrects.
I do know him,
Hunter admits, drawing another snort from Hollis. We both played for Roselawn Prep. He was a couple years ahead of me. Coach nods.
Pain in the ass, those Roselawn guys.
I literally just said I went to Roselawn,
Hunter protests.
I repeat, pain in the ass, those Roselawn guys.
Hunter sighs. We spend the next 15 minutes analyzing the first period of the Harvard-Boston College game. Coach is right. Weston Brooks, or Brooks Weston, or whatever the hell his name is a damn nuisance. He's aggressive as hell, getting away with high-sticking 3 minutes in, and almost instigating a fight before the buzzer. Weston manages to taunt his opponent into a couple harmless shoves, but just as the BC player is about to lunge, a teammate yanks him back. Weston is chortling as he skates off.
I dislike him already.
When the second period starts, Harvard is leading 2-0.
Does Connolly's slap shot look a lot deadlier this year, or is it just me?
Kelvin asks warily, his gaze glued to the screen.
Oh, it's deadlier, Coach confirms. And he's even faster now. He's scored on every breakaway he's had this season.
He points a finger around the room.
Don't let him rush the net, understood?
There's a chorus of yes, sir. An aforementioned breakaway kicks off the second. Sure enough, Connolly dekes out 4 opponents, including 2 defensemen who literally look like they don't know where they are. It's like this old 90s show I binge-watched last year, where the main character time jumps into random people's bodies in order to change history. Dude spends the first 5 minutes of every episode trying to figure out where the hell he is and whose body he jumped into. That's what Connolly does to these defensemen. Their heads swivel around in confusion as if they were just dropped onto the ice in the middle of a hockey game. By the time they realize what's happening, Connolly has blown past them and is already taking a shot. The puck sails into the upper left corner of the net with laser precision, like an osprey diving into the ocean to pluck up its dinner. Coach pauses on the goalie's look of sheer frustration as the lamp lights behind him.
Beautiful shot, Nate says grudgingly.
Yes, Coach agrees. And I don't want to see anything like it tonight, unless it's coming from one of you. Got it?
Got it,
everyone answers. We settle in to examine the rest of the tape. As Coach points out what he deems to be weaknesses on Harvard's team, we hang on to his every word. We're going to have to exploit every single weakness if we want to kick their asses tonight.
10. Summer. Can you believe he said that?
It's been a whole day since my kitchen encounter with Fitz, and I'm still fuming.
Yes, I can believe it,
Brenna answers irritably.
I believed it when you told me during the first period, and I believed it during the second period. And now it's the third, and I still fucking believe it. So will you please, for the love of little baby Jesus, just let it go?
Never, I declare.
Her response is a cross between a groan and a laugh. Oh, my God. You're so stubborn. Have you always been this stubborn? Yep, I am stubborn. I'll own that. But you know what I won't own? I cross my arms tight to my chest. Being illiterate. Because I know how to read. Brenna stares up at the rafters as if to ask the heavens for help. Or maybe she's meditating, though that'd be difficult to do in a packed arena. Plus, we need to stay vigilant, because we showed up late and got stuck sitting in a section overrun by Harvard fans. We're two black and silver dots drowning in a sea of crimson. There are tons of other fans wearing Briar colors, but most of them seem to be congregated on the other side of the arena. Despite Brenna teasing me about it yesterday, we're not wearing Briar jerseys. I'm glad for that. We've already received more than enough dirty looks for not representing the Crimson. Summer, honey, he didn't accuse you of being illiterate. Brenna's tone is one you'd use on a preschooler you're teaching to paint with watercolors. Barely checked patience. He implied I was too stupid to read Shifting Winds. Everybody's too stupid for Shifting Winds, she growls. You honestly think all those people who claim to love the series actually read the damn books? They haven't, because they're fucking 5,000 pages long. I tried to read the first book one time, and the dickwad author spent 9 pages describing a tree. 9 pages! Those books are the worst, the absolute worst. She runs out of breath, grinning when she notices me laughing my butt off. And that was my TED talk about Shifting Winds, she says graciously. You're welcome. My good humor doesn't last long. He was just so condescending, Brenna. Her tone becomes cautious. Was he? Or are you just extra sensitive to everything he says now, because of what he said about you being surface level? I bite my bottom lip. It's true. I am overly sensitive these days, especially about Fitz. It's just, I keep trying to perceive myself through his eyes, and the picture that forms isn't something to be proud of. I see a ditzy blonde who got kicked out of one sorority and banned from another, who's always on academic probation, whose father had to call in a favor to get her into college, whose brother called another one in to find her a place to live. I see a screw-up. With a heavy heart, I say as much to Brenna, but a roar from the crowd drowns out her response. Her gaze hasn't left the ice once during our conversation, and now she's shooting to her feet. Are you blind, ref? She screams. That was tripping! A group of guys a few rows behind us start cackling at her outrage. Hey, it's not our fault your shitty players can't skate without tripping over their own feet, one of them mocks. Oh, you really want to go there? She spins around and I smother a laugh. Aside from her silvery gray scarf, she's wearing all black again, plus the red lipstick I'm beginning to realize is her trademark. With her dark hair loose and her eyes blazing, she looks like a total badass. She kind of resembles Gal Gadot, the actress who plays Wonder Woman. Come to think of it, she resembles the original Wonder Woman, too. AKA she's frigging gorgeous. And the boys she's glaring at do a double take when they notice who they've been heckling. The only shitty thing I see is the huge dump your goalie just took on the ice, she taunts back. I snort, a chortle breaking free. Take a look at the scoreboard douche nozzles and tell me what you see, she chirps, pointing to the screens above center ice. The score clearly reads Briar 1, Harvard 0. None of them follow her gaze. Watch your mouth, one snaps. Watch yours, she snaps back. Your boys are pussies, he jeers, standing there begging for a call instead of taking it like a man. Oh no, the bad man tripped me. His buddies break out into gales of laughter. Don't make me come up there, Brenna warns, hands planted firmly on her hips. Don't tempt me. I don't fight chicks. But I might make an exception for you. I don't hit men either, she says sweetly. But luckily, I don't see any men around here. Do you? You bitch! I yank on Brenna's arm and force her to sit back down. Relax, I order. I'm acutely aware of the death glares all around us. They're a bunch of jerks, She grumbles. And that ref was a dick. Anderson was totally tripped. They should have called a